listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to a brand new episode of the 9to5 Entertainment System. On this, the episode you're listening to right now, we talk about some Linux exploits that were in the news. We talk about how April Fool's sucks. We talk about how hacking could be fun. We talk Godzilla X Kong. I watched all 5 hours of Fanny and Alexander, and Scott and I both watched Roadhouse. On the bonus episode, the episode that you can get access to if you go to patreon.com/9to5cc and subscribe to the 90s deluxe level, you can hear us talk about Masters of Kung Fu, the comic book series, the Arrowverse comic book series, the Montreal man who was scammed out of a Rolex, and unfortunately it happens in real time on the episode of Garbage Time. We talk about Ed Piskor passing away. And as always, if you or someone you know is thinking about suicide, if you live in Canada, you can call or text 988. Support is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I know it's a little heavy, and you know what? We don't talk about that heavy stuff in this main show, so you don't have to worry about it. Sit back and relax and enjoy. Fucking April Fools is
all of it.
I mean, I think some of the cutesy stuff that like when a website or something is like, oh, it's funny, and we did like an obvious April Fool. I mean, was it last year in Marvel Snap where they sold like a rock?
Yeah,
like a card that was a rock. You know, stuff like that. You're like, yeah, it's obvious garbage. Today in Marvel Snap, there's Pixel All Stars, so there's Pixel variants on the cards that are the worst. Like, the community hates them all, and when you buy variants, you can buy special packs to get guaranteed no pixels. So they made a special like Pixel All Star variant bundle, shit like that. That's funny, that's cute. Who cares? I hate when like genuine news sources write like fake news articles, and they're like April Fools. I'm like, no, that sucks. It's not a that's not a funny joke.
Okay, so what sucked? What was the shitty?
The Suburban.
Okay.
So the Suburban Arts and Entertainment writer, who, you know, is no longer Walter, some other dude, wrote a thing about being like, oh, some of the people who are like working with like Andy Nullman and all that stuff are actually like, what they're going to do is the week that Just for Laughs is going to be, they're actually going to record like Jimmy Kimmel's show live from Place des Arts. And like, so there'll be like guests and it'll be like all this and that. And I was like, oh, that is... And then he's like, of course, this is just an April Fool's joke. And I'm like, first of all, not of course. That's like well within the realm of possibility and seems like a genuinely good idea. You just suck.
Isn't Just for Laughs out of Montreal? Didn't they? Isn't it like dead?
Yeah, exactly. It's not happening. And that was the point of the article, was saying that like, because Jimmy Kimmel, like, I guess knew some of the people, he was saying like, and again, these shows occasionally record in other like cities for like, they'll do like a little 5-night stand or whatever. And it was like, that week is now like clearly not a big week of comedy, but it would be like a center point of a week that is kind of dead in Montreal anyway, right?
That's kind of a bummer.
I know. I was just sort of like, wow, you suck. I was like, that seemed like a genuinely kind of maybe a nice thing that would be like, obviously not a comedy festival, but that would have been like a cool thing for the city to host, a one night, like a 1 week stand of like one of the late night talk shows. Nope, April Fool's. I'm like, that's not an April Fool's joke. It's just
because it's not a joke.
It's not a joke, exactly. It's just shitty. You're like, you got people's hopes up, and then you're like, haha, it was fake.
It turns out everything still sucks. Oh.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. Thanks for that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't know. I've never really got April Fool's in general. And I don't know. There's also rules. There are rules that apparently you have to do them by before noon, and then you must, like, reveal your fool afternoon.
Is that so? I feel like it's like numb. There are actually not rules.
No, I mean, I think this is like, that's the rules.
No, no. Are we done with April Fools? I have cool hacker shit to talk about.
Cool hacker shit. I guess, yeah. Go.
Yeah, okay, so check
this out. April Fool sucks.
That's right. Okay, cool hacker shit. Okay, so check this out. Some guy is doing benchmark testing on the speed of his server sometime last week.
Okay.
And there's a connection that is taking like a couple hundred milliseconds too long to make. And the only reason that he went in and investigated it, you know, like ordinarily, you're plugging into the internet, it takes you like 100 extra milliseconds, right? Do you kind of care? No, whatever, it's some lag. But he's doing some testing and he goes in and he looks at it and he finds that there is an honest to God backdoor in one of the like the high level encryption things in Linux. And he starts digging into what this is. And you might be like thinking to yourself, oh, who gives a shit? I'm running a Windows machine or I'm on my iPhone. I don't give a fuck about a backdoor in Linux. Well, quoting somebody in the Hacker News thread where they were talking about this, what would you do with a billion computers? Like, you don't have to hack somebody's iPhone when you have hacked every computer that relays the internet.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like I was going to say, like Linux servers and Unix-based servers and everything, they're all over the place.
The whole thing, the whole shebang, the whole of the internet was hacked by this. And what's really cool is that it was not just like a bug that was repurposed or like, you know, taken advantage of. This was like an honest-to-God backdoor. And because it was like implemented into a bunch of open source software, people can go back and trace the history. How long did it take to get the backdoor in? How was it done? What are the steps that it takes to execute this backdoor? And what they found was that it was at least 3 years of social engineering. They had to like bamboozle their way into being one of the lead developers on this one extremely small module that does a bunch of encryption in the way high level backdoor of the thing. And it's not just one step where there's like a command, you know, because this is all open source. It's all on GitHub. You can go, you look at all the code. It had to survive somebody actually like taking a look at it with their eyes. So one of the steps, There's code, and I'm gonna fuck up explaining this because I'm not like a kernel developer, right? So I'm just gonna do my best because I think it's interesting. There's like a block of text that is like 35 lines of code, and if you look at it, you're like, you're supposed to detect that the thing has been hacked, and the only thing that was changed on it was a single period added to the middle. But like, you know, when you put a quote, there's like the little arrows that show the quote at the start of a block of text, like if you're replying to an email or something. So it has that, but the extra period is at the start of that line, so right after one of the little arrows. And the reason that it fucks it up is because now the whole thing is not an executable, and then they had also hacked the thing that is supposed to give you an error message when that thing doesn't compile properly. And it's like multiple layers of that going on to the point where...
But so hang on, is this truly though? Is this truly a hack, or is it so much as someone just got in the code and recoded? Right, like they, you know what I mean? Like in the sense of like, usually a hack is you got in through some nefarious means, but you're like, no, I made it my job to have access to this code, and then I left myself a backdoor.
That part is the hack. I made it my job. That's the hack.
Well, I guess. but you understand what I'm saying? It's not like they did it remotely. It's like they purposefully made dangerous code to exploit later.
It kind of depends how you define hack, but like the really, really interesting part that is like the reason I'm even bothering to talk about this is that 3 years social engineering, multiple layers to it, and understanding the Linux kernel to a degree by which like very few human beings on the planet will be able to put together how to do something like this. The like consensus across the board of every thread that I've read is that only a nation state would have the time and resources to dedicate to something like this. So it's either like China and like the username that was like behind the hack is Jia Tan. Now that doesn't mean that it was Chinese. Like anybody could call themselves Jia Tan. And I read somebody did analysis from the point of view of Mandarin versus Cantonese names to say, is Jia Tan like a legitimate one? And the answer is that it is not. So it's like a mix of a prename and a last name that don't really work together as well as it does. So it kind of like just sounds like a good Chinese name, but it could also be a Russian doing it. And it could very well be a Chinese person doing it because they know it's going to sound fishy and it's going to like, there's just no way to get.
Yeah. I mean, well, there was like a report or whatever a couple of weeks ago that like China had the most state sponsored hacks of anybody last year and everything. So, I mean, like, not to say it's definitely China, but like, there's a very real chance that it's China. I mean, the thing I guess is, it could be anybody though.
If we were a bunch of Chinese dudes doing a podcast, we would be saying the exact same thing, that it's America who has more hackers than whatever, and the NSA has been hacking things seven ways from Sunday. You know, like, there's plausible deniability.
100%. But I mean, I feel that they've, like, industrialized hacking, especially with some of the social engineering and stuff that's going on. Like, did you watch are you aware of pig butchering or have watched the John Oliver on pig butchering?
I mean, I was aware of the term like years and years ago, but and then I saw it on Reddit or something last week. So all he's saying is that that's where you fatten up a pig before you butcher it. So like it's like many layers of getting.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. But there's been like footage and stuff that have come out of like basically like camps of where they have people who like owe the Chinese mafia money, and then they're like, here's how you work off this money, and they have like guidebooks on how to social engineer people for months and months and months, and the people are like, we can't leave and we get beaten if we screw up and whatever else. So like they're not even like the people that are actually scamming you are equally screwed over also by like the Chinese mob, or like in this case was a Chinese funded mob oriented situation where they had like some of the camera footage that like leaked out of them just like kicking the shit out of a guy who was trying to like leave and stuff. So you're like, you can't even really be mad at the guy that's texting you even, because he's equally screwed, you know. So
I kind of remember reading about somebody being kidnapped, like straight up kidnapped from somewhere, and then waking up in one of those camps and being told like, okay, we're gonna let you go in 6 months, you have to get X number of dollars, and crazy stuff like that.
And the level of all this stuff that's going on is like the fact that they never ask you directly for money, right? Like they'll set up like shell apps for you to like invest in, and they make it look like your investment's going up, because it'd be crazy. Hey, don't give me your money. That'd be crazy. Download this app. I made a bunch of money on it. And then you've been talking to this guy for 6 months, right? Yeah. So like he's your online friend now. Like it's super weird. And they like research into you via social engineering. So it's like people are like pretending to be some of the same neighborhood that your parents are from, and like all this and that. And again, it's the shittiest thing in the world, because you're just like a person you think is your friend who we're putting all the time in. It's not like Nigerian prince, send $10,000 to get my millions of dollars. It's someone who you're like, they were talking to some of the victims of it. People, they're like, they were talking to me for hours a day, like hours and hours a day, like to the point where I thought of them as like one of my best friends. Like, oh, I was like, that's so weird.
Think about how much money, like even $100,000, $50,000 is to somebody in a third world country.
100%. They fleeced the like some of the victims, whatever. You're talking like several $100,000 just poof is gone. And then like, and on top of that, they take another swing on the way out to be like, oh, we can return the funds for you for like a $50,000 or whatever else. Like once the gig is up and they have all your money, they're like, more money, please. as they butcher the pig, so it goes.
Read that there's a shame aspect to it too. People like you're in for $50,000, you realize it's gone, and you just don't want to tell anybody. You're like fucking embarrassed, you know.
For sure.
And I forget where it was, like McLean's or something. There was like a ton of Canadian people who've been hit by those.
Well, the reason Oliver brought it back up, because apparently like it's not a new concept by any means. But like the fact that it spiked hard up kind of obviously during the pandemic, where everybody was isolated and locked in. And it's just like the opening thing is usually just like a wrong number, right? Yeah. Like someone just texts to be like, hey, did you pick up like so-and-so after school? And you're like, no, sorry, man, wrong number. Oh, sorry about that. Da, 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 da. Hey, like weird question. Like, you know, and like on Facebook, like I see in your icon and like whatever. Now there's
you're in.
Exactly. Yeah. They're into your life. And yeah. And like I said, they don't even ask you for money. They're just like, oh man, I made a bunch of money on crypto or whatever else like that. I use this app.
Yep.
And then they send you, and the entire app is phony. Freaking genius, really. Like, sophisticated thieving. Mm-hmm. But,
yeah. My favorite part of that is how Apple gets a cut of it, because it's through the App Store.
100%.
They're just like, hey, that's cool. Any transaction that goes through the Apple Store, we get a cut of. Cool.
Hooray.
And then next thing you know it, fucking U2's got a new album on your phone, and you're just like, what the fuck happened? Damn you, Linux sucks.
Was that 15 years ago? People are still cranky about it. Man, it was a long ass time ago.
You guys were never really iPhone users, right? Either of you?
Nope.
Yeah, I was. It sucked.
Could you at least delete it, or was it just...
No, you could delete it, and it would stay on your phone grayed out, being like, you've deleted these songs. Like, yeah, no, I know.
That's so funny.
It was so awful. So you would have this weird gap in your scrolling list. You're like, I'm going to play this song next. There's 12 U2 songs that are grayed out that I can't play because I deleted them, but they won't leave.
You boot up the phone and it's like, hey, Scott, we noticed that you deleted U2. Are you sure about that? Do you want to reverse that decision?
Yeah, no, I'm sure about it. I don't want it. Okay, well, we'll just leave this ghost of the album there just in case
you change your mind.
They had to release a full patch, like not just like a little thing, like a full patch to iTunes to get rid of it. I remember having to wait to get home to get on the Wi-Fi to like download it. Yeah, it sucked.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's always social engineering, man. It was dumb.
Like, I remember when Scott from the podcast Hacked talked about how he got scammed, and he's the like the NetSec guy, and he's like, yep, he's like, it wasn't necessarily social engineering, but it was like a brand that he liked, and he's like, I googled the brand, and then it was the same brand, but it was a .ca instead of .com. And they even had the banner to be like, now shipping to Canada. And he's like, oh, that makes sense. You just registered the .ca domain. Boop, 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 boop. And just like orders this thing. And he was like, as soon as I like placed the order and then saw the charge came in and it like didn't match the URL. He's like, oh no. But he's like, obviously, he's like, I don't even feel like I got scammed. He's like, that was like, I mean, I was scammed, but he was like, there's nothing that I could have done about it that tracked, right? Like if you Google like Converse and then you see converse.ca now shipping to Canada, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. This is the Canadian storefront. Like how many stores do that exact thing online? Mm-hmm. It's not like Converse with a zero or whatever. He was like, it's the exact URL, but a .ca, which is pretty much.
I'm actually a little surprised that happened. .ca is notorious. Number one, because it's more expensive than a lot of other top level domains. And then also because supposedly the like controls for crime on .ca's are much better than other ones. Mm-hmm. Like the .ca top level registrar is actually supposedly reliable. Maybe I'm like out of date, but
yeah. Well, I mean, I think he might've even mentioned that where he was like, just, you know, could be just real sophisticated and just they ran out because it disappeared real fast. He's like, his impression was, he's like, they probably like flip it on and flip it off like to avoid detection. He's like, it's probably not up all the time. Cause he was like, it was like gone within a couple hours. And he's like, but with all that effort, he's like, I'm sure that they probably like flip it on, get a bunch of orders and then shut it down again.
So. Disappear from wherever it's being hosted by proxy and then like put it up somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
Not crazy. Yeah.
No. Anyway, hackers, man. What'll they do next?
Think about how much fun that would be. I mean, I get it. It's criminal. Don't do this. But if you had the skills, right, you could sit at home. You're like, oh, I wonder if I could pull that off. You know, you put together a couple of servers, put some ads up, and then you have $100,000 and then you turn it off.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. I could see it being fun just from a like a tech standpoint. You know?
If it was like made up money or something, you know what I mean? Like if it was just sort of like, I got like, I don't know, tokens in a game, like some actual victimless crime, and it wasn't people's real money. I feel that'd be a fun time. But no.
I mean, Sam Bankman just got his 25 years.
Mm-hmm. What was it? Less than Madoff, more than a murderer.
I mean, Madoff got 150. It's a lot less than Madoff. And I understand murderers, the average is 19 years. So in New York State, so he's like doing worse than them. I mean, how many billions did he get away with in the end?
So this was I was trying to figure, right? Because like obviously like Madoff of the 150 years and all that. I was like, how many people got wrecked by him? Right. Like that, cause I think that was the Madoff sentencing was like a lot of individuals had tangible tales of like, this is how he ruined all of my finances and my life. Where I was like, but everything is so nebulous in the like crypto world and all that stuff. I was trying to figure like, absolutely he made off with billions, but like how many individuals did he screw over?
Mm. Probably a fucking lot, man. FTX
probably a lot, but
small people, and Madoff did not get to small people. He was like big whales, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think, John,
you just hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Madoff stole from rich and influential people, so he got hit with a huge hammer.
Yeah.
I mean, 100%. That sucks. I also kind of remember that Madoff's victims, the restitution group that went after getting the money back for the Madoff situation, actually went back and took money away from people who had extracted money from the scam earlier on. Because, like, he had a lot of people who, like, you know, they would give him a million dollars.
He made some people rich.
Yeah. He gave him $1 million, and he's like, okay, your account now has $2 million in it, but if you keep it with me, I'm going to double it again this year. And they're like, this is fishy as fuck. I'm taking my million out, and then you can keep $1 million, and we'll see what happens next year. And then he puts another million in, and he's like, you give me more. And they're like, okay, I'm taking another million out. You know, so people made a lot of money off of him, and they went and took back money from people who had been in that situation. And it's kind of sketchy, right? Like, how much of that is their fault and it is ill-gotten gains, and how much would they have made on the interest if they had been doing something else? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they had just made an actual good investment, right, as opposed to a made-up good investment that their financial advisor was telling them was a good investment, who knows?
Yeah. Anyway, a lot of people for FTX, it was just like, my $500. I saved up $10,000. You know, it's all the money in my whole life. I'm 25, and I put it in FTX, and it's gone.
There it goes. Did we talk about Dumb Money? I watched Dumb Money.
What's Dumb Money?
We did talk about Dumb Money.
Yeah. The
GameStop movie.
Yeah, the GameStop movie.
Oh yeah.
We did talk about it. Yeah, it was funny. Yeah, some people lost money. Some people made money. And nobody. Yeah. Well, I think that it was like Roaring Kitty himself. I think they say his estimated net worth or whatever is like 32, 33, whatever. Somewhere in the mid 30s, $35 million. What a stud.
Yeah, but he was in like a year and going before it got big, right? Like, because I remember we did a show on it when it was at like $50, and then it went up to 350, and then there was like 3 weeks or 4 weeks of it bouncing around to like 300, 400, 200, 400, you know, like in that zone. But anybody who was gambling at that point, they were in way too fucking late.
Yeah. It was honestly, in terms of like money movies, I mean, I know we'd already talked about it, but watch The Big Short. I think The Big Short is a better movie.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Steve Carell and
Well, whatever. There's Paul Dano, and there's like a pretty big cast. Seth Rogen, Nick Offerman. Like, the cast on Dumb Money is pretty legit. I'm just saying. But I find The Big Short does like a better job of kind of like demonstrating the workings of it. Like, Dumb Money really just presents the hedge funds as big evil guys and Roaring Kitty as big good guys. Whereas Big Short is just like, there's like the people explaining how terrible each layer is.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of movies that and money, I saw the movie that made $80 million domestic this weekend, right off the hop.
Godzilla
X Kong. Was it good?
It good? I watched the trailer. It looked bananas.
Yes, it was. It was good because it was a movie about big monsters that punched each other and then punched buildings. And then punched everything. So did it deliver on promises? Yes, 100%.
So
there's plenty of them that don't. I remember the Bryan Cranston one. He barely punches any buildings.
That
series course corrected very well, I feel like. It started out so with the Bryan Cranston one. It
had like Kong Skull Island, which was fine, but way too gory.
Yeah, and then
they go to Skull Island and there's giant spiders and they're popping through people's skulls and blood splatters everywhere, and it's just like, okay.
And then it was another Godzilla. The third Godzilla one was good, and then Godzilla
there was
versus
King of
Kong
Monsters.
Was good.
King of Monsters, and that was great. And they just figured it out. And versus Kong was just delightful.
Fantastic.
And the newest one, X Kong, was amazing. It was great because the main character
was a giant baby monkey.
Yep, that's kind of a spoiler.
It's in the trailers.
I know it's in the trailers, but his personality is decidedly different in the movie.
Okay.
What is the X in X Kong?
It's Godzilla
multiplied
and
by
Kong,
Kong.
Versus
Godzilla multiplied
the Scar
by
King
Kong.
And Shimo and a couple other kaiju. So they're not fighting
Scar
each
King
other.
Is also a big monkey?
Scar King is a big monkey, yeah.
Yeah. It's their, once again, the reluctant allies. Just like they were at the end of Godzilla versus Kong when they were like Mecha Godzilla. And they're like, okay, we do hate each other, but we hate this guy more.
So here's the big twist for this movie. The main character is not a human character. And that's kind of the first time.
It's a baby monkey?
No, it's King Kong.
King Kong is the main character.
He's the main character. He's the point of view character. He is the character that leads all of the interpersonal conflicts, and that's pretty wild. That's like a wild thing to put into a kaiju script. But
where you're like from the point of view of the monster.
Yeah. That's
kind of cool.
Yeah, it's new. It's different, and it kind of works because the CG is good enough that they can have him emote on screen.
Yeah, I was gonna say we're always like look into the soulful eyes of the gorilla, and you're like whatever. We can just do that on a big giant one now.
Exactly. At one point, he goes up and he's like, "I need to get Godzilla's help." Right, he knows he needs Godzilla.
Hang on, when you say he goes up and he says, "I need to get Godzilla's help."
Did you watch any of the other movies?
I've watched King of Monsters and Godzilla vs. Kong, okay. And I read the synopsis of the other ones.
Right,
I think I also saw Skull Island.
So the way that the movie is set up is Godzilla rules the overworld, mm-hmm. and Kong has the Hollow Earth. And they stay out of each other's business, and that's fine. Because Godzilla can abide by no alpha male energy. Because
he's the king of monsters.
He's the king of monsters, and the second that anything shows up and is just like, "Hey, I'm a badass," Godzilla flies around the earth, swims across the ocean, jumps out, and kicks their ass.
Correct.
So Kong shows up, and he's like, "Man, I'm getting my ass kicked in Hollow Earth."
But again, I'm going to stop you right there. When you say he's like, how does he say this? Because King Kong shows up, and he's like, "Hey, man."
He gets his ass kicked.
Okay.
And then he runs away, and then he looks up at the portal. And he goes up the portal, and then he screams, and Godzilla comes flying across the earth.
They just yell at each other?
They just yell at each other. And then Godzilla shows up. Godzilla shows up, and Kong puts his hands up in front of him, and is just like, hang on, just waving them back and forth, kind of shrugging. And Godzilla gives no fucks. He points at the hole, and Godzilla gives no fucks. They fight for like 5 minutes, and then they kind of figure it out. And go down the hole to kick more ass together this time. It's amazing. It's the most pro wrestling plot line ever.
It's great.
It's exactly that. It's like fucking like
Shakespeare.
Matt and Jeff Hardy, like Jeff coming into the back, and Matt is like, "I hate you, you're," and they fight for a little bit, and then we're like, "But we're brothers, and nothing. No one, anyone who attacks one of us attacks both of us." They go and get into another big fight. It's great.
It's basically how the Jimmy and Jey Uso fight is going to go down this weekend at WrestleMania.
Yeah. Including Godzilla suplexing King Kong at one point.
Yes.
Full on standing, lets his legs stand in the air for a second for all the blood to rush to his head, and then slamming him down to the ground.
Walks around, does the circle. I have a question. Did you watch Godzilla Minus One? Because everybody was telling me that was fantastic. And not to diminish Godzilla X Kong, but like Godzilla X One Minus One won. Didn't it win an Oscar?
Yeah, best visual effects. No, I haven't watched it yet. I haven't watched it because Toho and Legendary have an agreement not to release movies in the same year. So Minus One came out in 2023, and I didn't see it in theaters because it just kind of skipped in and out. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to release it for streaming until after X-Kong leaves theaters.
Huh.
So they have an agreement not to be out at the same time for anything.
That's, I mean, logical, right? Because you're like they're both kind of benefiting from the same brand, the brand being Godzilla.
Yep.
So you don't want to like cannibalize your own audiences respectively, but
the Academy Awards were not that long ago, and they can't capitalize on that hype.
Yeah, exactly. That's the issue for me.
But that's the deal, right? Like, I mean, that works both ways, right? Like, if Toho was getting ready for Minus One Part Two, and Legendary was like, "No, we're saving Godzilla X Kong for the same release date." You'd be like, okay, that sucks too.
Yeah.
Stay off my lawn.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. I feel that, I don't know, there are probably some internet pirates have figured a way for you to watch it. Not that we would endorse that, but...
I haven't seen any good releases because there's no digital release yet at all. So, I mean, if I wanted...
Even in Japan?
Even in Japan, yeah. It's a worldwide restriction, year to year. Until one is out, the other one can't be.
That's wild.
And Godzilla...
It's kind of like, that's kind of like a bummer for almost everybody involved, because it just won an Oscar for visual effects. And everyone's like, wow, I want to watch that one. They're like, no, watch Oz first.
Yeah. And, I mean, Legendary can't be too sad, because... 80 million domestic, 136 million worldwide on the first weekend.
I wonder how that ranks in terms of kaiju films in general. You know, I feel like the bar is probably a little lower for these.
I think it's extremely high. They're talking, this is MCU numbers.
I mean, is the biggest kaiju movie Pacific Rim? Is it?
Off the top of my head, I wouldn't be surprised.
I would say it has to be the last one.
Well, no, because the last one was pandemic release. It was probably smoked at box office.
Godzilla vs. Kong. That...
Yeah, Godzilla vs. Kong was still 2021. Investigative journalism. How did the Kong movies do? Yeah, I would say Pacific Rim is probably the, if not the absolute high watermark, definitely a high watermark for big monster movies. What was I going to say? But yeah, so Delivered, family fun too. I saw you took the whole family.
Archer loved it. I think it was the most fun for him because there was so little human dead weight. Right? Like, there's not a whole lot of like, my daughter ran away.
You want to make me care about Transformers movies? No humans. Just Transformers.
Yeah, like, my father is a scientist at the nuclear power plant, and we gotta go say, like, none of that happened, right? Like, they were just...
What a bummer for Archer, though, because now if he wants to go watch any more, you know, he's gonna be seeing rubbery guys.
He's so much, though. Don't you guys watch that shit all the time?
Yeah, he's probably seen at least 15 Godzilla movies.
Okay, good. Well, then he's ready to appreciate it.
So it's just weird. in terms of Godzilla movies, the first Godzilla, Bryan Cranston one, grossed $200 million domestic.
Wow.
And that was double up on Godzilla versus Kong, which grossed $100 million. And Godzilla X Kong made $80 million in the last 3 days.
Yeah.
So, like I said,
Godzilla vs. Kong is, I don't think, like I said, a fair comparison, because that was also when WB was releasing movies directly to HBO on opening day, because it was still
King of Monsters. King of Monsters made $110 million, and that was May 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And that was partially because it followed Godzilla, the Bryan Cranston one, and people were like, oh, this movie's going to be dark and shitty, and I won't understand anything that's going on.
Yeah, but they were, like, correcting it. Yeah, I feel like it's like they realized the lesson that, like, certain horror movies learned, which was that you make the bad guys, even though they're not bad guys in this version, but you make the bad guys the main character. Like,
Pacific Rim domestically made 101, and worldwide made 309 at 2013, 10 years ago.
20 years ago.
So,
still pretty good, though.
The Bryan Cranston Godzilla is the king of the box office until
for
next
now.
Week.
Yeah. Speaking of box office, apparently, you know, it didn't do well over the weekend or the last 2 weekends. The new Ghostbusters is apparently trash. It's so sad. Yeah. All the reviews I've read about it, they're like, it's like bloated. It doesn't know if it's trying to like push it forward or like bask in nostalgia. Like, messed up all over the place. Like, no one... They're, like, lackluster performances from everything. They're, like... It's just... It's like, apparently, it's, like, the worst parts of the new one. But, like, now they're in New York, so there's more... And there's more original Ghostbusters instead of just showing up in the third act. They're there, like, the whole time.
Yeah,
I'm sure I'll watch
Winston and Janine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm sure I'll watch it, but it had a 70% drop from weekend one to weekend two or something like that. Like,
everyone wants to go see Godzilla, that's why.
Yeah, and also as someone was just sort of like the headline I read, they were like, based on a toxic word of mouth campaign, as people who went to go see it in the first weekend told everybody it's not worth seeing. And then Godzilla came out and like Dune did better. I think like week six Dune did better than week two Ghostbusters or something like that.
Like, I mean, I was like, is that surprising though? Because that's a franchise that I don't think has ever sucked. Equaled. Yeah, has mostly sucked. Like one
I mean,
is a masterpiece.
Like the Dune franchise.
I mean, no.
On. Dune one franchise. Is a masterpiece, and then they're all kind of a mess after that. But like Dune doesn't have a franchise; it has one other movie, and then the you know the one from the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. And I mean, and it's a big sell too. Like to get people, I'm a little bit surprised that Dune did and is doing as well as it is, on account of the fact that it is like nearly a 3-hour movie with like minimal dialogue and super weird like.
I will tell you this, man. Some of the people that I work with have no interest in science fiction, let alone hard science fiction. And they're just like, yeah, but Timothée Chalamet is so pretty. They will go see anything that boy is in.
Really?
I mean, I guess you have Timothée Chalamet and you have Zendaya. Like, they're both like super it guy and it girl in terms of casting right now. So that is a thing.
Yeah, between Chalamet and that, what's her name of her TV show? That weird Zendaya's TV show.
Euphoria.
That if my personal interactions are anything, if you're between the ages of 20 and 30, everything about that show is all encompassing important to you.
I really like that show, and I'm 41.
It's fine for other people to like it. I'm just saying that I've heard more about that show than pretty much any other television show, just in conversations happening around me.
It's a great show. It's a lot of fun. It's just a bunch of, you know, sexy teens doing drugs.
That sounds like it's always been in your wheelhouse, Keith.
You know? That's what I'm saying.
I can think of no point in my life, whatever 25 years I've known you, that you haven't been talking about some show.
Sexy teens and drugs.
That's right. Speaking of cinema, guys, I watched an art.
Oh, was it the movie? You watched the
5 hours of Ingmar Bergman's masterpiece.
Oh my goodness. You did it. So, you did the 5-hour version?
Yeah, 100%.
I'm so proud of you. Oh my God, that's wonderful.
So first of all, I mean, like it is, I promise you, Scott, it is a miniseries. It is like shot like a miniseries. It is edited like a miniseries. There are pauses and chapter titles where the episodes would start and finish. It's, I guarantee you, and Ingmar Bergman was making a miniseries that then people chose to smash into a like 3-hour film at first, which is what won the Oscars. And then ultimately people were like, wait, there's more? And then made the full like 5.5 hours or whatever it is and put it into theaters. But like in interviews with Bergman, he was like, he was producing it as a miniseries, couldn't sell the miniseries, so was like, I'll make it a movie. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how this affects future best movie evers, but this is a miniseries. I also don't, enough to say I don't know what they would cut. I mean, I know there's plenty to cut. It's 5 hours. But it's like, it is, like I said, it's definitely a miniseries. And it's like really good. I don't even know, like, I was like, hey, Sarah, do you want to watch this thing in Swedish with me? And she was like, we'll see. And like the opening portion is about, I think it's an hour 40, is just the the Ekdal family's Christmas celebration. And like, that was like as good a bit of like television drama as you could want. Like, you're just like, you're established. It's, there's like a really good thing when you say like they're like a wealthy family in this little like Swedish town in the 1900s, and they like seem to have all their shit together and like having this like joyous occasion, and like little like bit by bit, like, not to say that like they're, you don't ever really turn against them, but like all of their like troubles and shortcomings and stuff sort of like all kind of like drift up in the first hour and 40. So you don't really have any idea, like everything seems like super idyllic as you're watching it, and it like slowly like comes apart as you kind of like, oh, the uncle that's like super fun and like making little jokes at the kids and whatever else, you now get to see the aside of how he's like terrible with money and that, you know, is just like a complete sham and like has to go to his mother for money, but she's cut him off and whatever, you know, and you're like, oh man, fun uncle. He's, but like, you only find that out later on. And then, in the second part, what happens in the second part? Oh yeah. In the
How
second
long
part,
are these parts? Each one is an hour.
Yeah, about an hour. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
The second part. Yeah. So basically Fanny and Alexander's father runs like a playhouse, and he has managed to like make it kind of a profitable endeavor, and he married an actress, and that is Fanny and Alexander's mother. He dies in the second part. Yes, he dies in the second part. Like, that's kind of like the climax of the second part. And then everybody is sad. And like, stuff you're like, what would they cut? Like, here's examples of things they might cut for the theatrical release.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a straight up like 15 to 20 minutes of Hamlet. It's just they're doing a dress rehearsal of Hamlet, and you're like, oh, I guess we're watching Hamlet for a while. There are plenty of things like that where you're like, whoa, this is just, I guess I'm just watching this. The supernatural elements are also not they're not as many as the write-ups. They were like fantastical, whatever. There's like a few little snips of like fantasy, like the opening scene of the entire piece is like Alexander's like crawling around in his rich person house, and like one of the statues is like moving around, and he's like keeps like looking at it, and then he sees like a weird like guy with an axe, like choo-choo, like one of the, you know, like an armor axe thing that you have in your rich person house moves around. And so, okay, so he kind of sees things moving around. Is that an imagination or is it supernatural? Who knows? Anyway, in the third part, the bishop, like the town bishop, marries the mom and then decides that he's going to like force them to live like a complete life full of like free of like frivolity and personal possessions and everything. And then just keeps these kids like locked up in a tower. And that's like most of like the third and fourth part is kind of like just these weird kids. There's some supernatural stuff there too, where they lock Alexander up in a tower, and the bishop's dead daughters get mad at Alexander for lying about how they died. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Weird. Uh-huh.
Okay, but is there like a consolidating theme here? This sounds like all over the place.
It is all over the place, and ultimately, to get to where we're going, he wishes the bishop dead, and then he gets kind of like kidnapped, but like benevolently kidnapped by one of the family friends to like hide in his puppet shop, and then there's they believe in magic, and then he wishes the bishop dead, and then one of the weird family friends' children is like, we can do this. And then then the bishop dies, and because his sister, who has like a weird skin situation, smashes into some lanterns and burns the house down, and because the mother has like slipped a bunch of sleeping pills to the bishop, he dies. And then the family's like, well, I guess we're back together. The end. It really, really, really seems to be Ingmar Bergman, and this is what I was trying to like put together in terms of his actual history. So his actual father was a man of the cloth. So, and apparently, and he said like repeatedly that like Fanny and Alexander is like semi-autobiographical. So is it like that his actual priestly father was like holding him back from being creative, and that he felt like probably like struggling with, I was a kid with a big imagination and was like, I wish that my father was like a playwright and all that stuff. And that was like his childhood fantasy. And then he kind of like puts it against his actual dad, like oppressing his creativity, I guess. In the end, the rich people are okay. That's the end of the film.
That's the important part.
But yeah, no, it's like, it was really good. Like, I mean, like the fact that, like, Sarah and I like blasted through it in a weekend. Like, she was like, oh, we'll watch the second part. Well, we'll watch the third part. And I was like, yeah, cool. Like, I have absolutely no problem watching this film. Well, film or miniseries. It just was like a really, and again, like at its absolute like worst and most dull, it's still shot by like Ingmar Bergman. So like, it's still shot well, and there's still like cool, like excellent camera movings and framing and stuff, even if it's just like freaking Hamlet for 20 minutes in the middle of them. Like, you know, you're still like, okay, I can just, at the very least, almost every shot is like beautiful still. So even if, even when it kind of gets like dull and heavy, but yeah, I
just imagine watching an episode of like Frasier where his radio show goes for an hour right in the middle of the sitcom. Just like the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like,
it, huh. I guess this is what that, I was like, I guess this is what this is now. Yeah. I guess I can't really say anything bad about it. It was just like, I think it probably made a better movie than a miniseries. Like, I think that like the, like 2 hours of streamlining down to a brisk 3 hours would have probably like made the slog of it feel a little breezy. But again, because it's cut so much like a miniseries, you just think of it as like a show with 5 episodes.
Could you be in a theater and watch the whole thing? Because people did that.
Really?
But yeah, they did. They ran the five hour thing, but it was still shot on like film. So that means there were breaks while they were switching the film. I was looking into like what the 5 hour take was. Apparently there'd be like, there were two, it was 3 reels. So there were 2 brief pauses. So like maybe, like I'd have to be really into it, but I don't know what the level of entertainment was in 1983. But like, you know, would that have been
I think there's a reason that George Lucas and Steven Spielberg broke so big.
Because they were like, we're not just going to do long Shakespearean monologues right in the middle of our story.
Right?
I mean, maybe. Like, how far away, how far removed are we from Die Hard? Die Hard is 87?
Yeah.
Yeah. So 4 years later, Die Hard. Die Hard is quite a jump up from Fanny and Alexander. But I mean, like, when you guys were pitching it, I was like, is this Dr. Zhivago? Because it sounds like Dr. Zhivago. And like, it certainly like operates in that space. Like, Dr. Zhivago was also a miniseries that what run this 4 hours or whatever. And you're
I
just
didn't
like,
know that.
Yeah. Yeah, the Dr. Zhivago that I watched with my mother.
Wow.
See, you guys didn't think about the fact that my mom watched old stuff. So there's the Dr. Zhivago 1965. Was that a television show that turned into a film? Epic historical romance, Dr. Zhivago. Yeah, so yeah, well, the 1992 re-release is the one we had at home. That's 200 minutes. So that's 3 hours. Three and a half hours, basically. Yeah. So yeah, it's like, but it plays in that very sim, and that was a 1965 movie that, but again, it's just like hanging out for such a long time to be like, let's just give all of these characters room to breathe, you know, like the entire storyline of like his two uncles, pretty superfluous, but it provides a lot of like interesting context to being like what the family's about, how the family's kind of spent its money, the different like relationships that they have and all that, like, so you're kind of, I mean, like, it really,
if you go back like, and watch some of those movies just pre-Spielberg, right, like anything before Jaws.
Yeah.
You'll get like action blockbuster of the year, The French Connection. I'm like, that movie is like 2 hours and 10 minutes, and it's a lot of Gene Hackman just talking in the car on a stakeout about how New York works.
One car chase.
Right. And you're like, the summer blockbuster, James Bond. You're just like, yeah, no, there's not a lot happening. And when there is a fight scene, you know,
he throws karate chop.
Karate chop, three punch. Throw over the couch, and he looks gassed. He's like, like if you were to show fucking Rumble in the Bronx to these people, they would have heart attacks.
Oh, what's that new one that's coming out that looks batshit? Monkey something? Monkey Mask?
Monkey Man?
Yeah, Monkey Mask. That looks crazy. That looks crazy fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. As a miniseries, super watchable. Like, I would, Sarah and I were even like the first part, the Christmas part, I was like, I would like low key probably like consider introducing that into my like holiday films that I watch. Like,
really?
Yeah. I said, it's again, it's really good. And it like, it ends well, like that first part you could watch and not. Like, you're like, I wonder what happens to that family. But, like, it does, it ends, at, like, at the end of Christmas. So it just kind of plays, like a family drama over Christmas. And also, I don't know if there is any other version, but we did watch it entirely in Swedish. So we were like, dub it, dubs is for suckers. I think the dubbing would have bothered me a lot. I was a lot more down to watch subtitles with people actually speaking Swedish. Hmm. Anyway, I mean, you did
I'm
it.
I'm impressed. 2 weeks, bang, knocked it out. Six hours.
We were done the first weekend. Like it was like we literally popped it on. I want to say we watched the first part. We watched like on a Thursday night, and then I think Friday we watched like part two, part three. Saturday we watched part four, and then Sunday we wrapped it up on part five. It's good stuff. In the middle of watching Fanny and Alexander, we watched Roadhouse.
Yeah, I watched it too.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
And?
They say a perfect movie doesn't exist. Oh, yeah. So before we hit Roadhouse, though, I was like, do you want to rank Fanny and Alexander? Like, I don't, yeah, like I said, should. Again, we I don't know. I don't know if it deserves ranking on account of the fact that it's quite clearly a miniseries. Like, I would feel the same way putting, like, Maniac on the movie list, because it is very much a miniseries.
Mm. So that I loved Maniac, but I don't know if it belongs on the list.
Yeah. It's hard to tell.
I mean, I'm going to stand by the fact that just because
they played the 5-hour version in theaters, I know they did. And but like
they filmed, shot, cut, edited, scored, and released a 5-hour movie straight to theaters. Didn't go on TV first. They put it together as a movie and released it in a movie theater. Charged people money to sit down in a theater and watch it. Just because it had
that was
five
because
parts.
Of popular demand. That after, it was popular demand right, that landed them at the 5 hours.
Maniac was never in theaters.
Correct.
This thing was in theaters.
This thing was in theaters. But right. But again, it was he was again shot it as a miniseries.
No,
could not sell the
of
miniseries.
It as a miniseries.
No, shot it as a well no, but filmed it as a miniseries. Conceived it and filmed it as a miniseries. Could not sell the miniseries. Recut it to 188. People were like, amazing, more. And he's like, you won't believe this, but I have 2 more hours of the Iqdal family. And then release the 5 hours. That's what I'm saying. It's like it is a roundabout way that he did not just conceived like on a drawing board, like shot and filmed it as a miniseries, couldn't distribute it, recut it to be a feature film at 188. And then when people were like, more, please, he was like, here's the whole thing. And then eventually it obviously landed on television. So,
just because G.I. Joe the movie ended up chopped up in a 5-part cartoon series doesn't mean it's not a movie.
I'm just saying, just like we went to go see season one of Red vs. Blue at the movie theater for Fantasia. Would I consider season one of Red vs. Blue a film?
Bro, no, but that was a special event.
I mean, this thing at 5 hours only screened a special event, sir. The 5 hours was only ever released as like special, a super limited release of the full 5 hours. The 188 released.
How long after each episode of Red versus Blue did it end up in movie theaters?
How long after
each? Because each episode of Red versus Blue was released 2 weeks apart.
Mm-hmm.
One by one, not in theaters. And then someone just played them all. In a theater. Doesn't mean it
like
wasn't
I said,
movie.
I'm just saying it is it's due to its conception and execution. I have a hard time necessarily saying this is a full movie. This is a mini series that they played in theaters, I think. Right. Where
would how about this, Keith? Neon Genesis 1.01. You are not alone.
Yeah, that's a movie. They made that as a whole movie, though.
Oh, but it was
that's
conceived of as a series.
No, it wasn't. No, though. And then wasn't. They made a film that was based on a series. That's a different thing.
That told the exact same story. It was definitely conceived of as a series first, and then they made a movie about it.
No, not even different. Okay, I am looking at. And there's some bad movies on this. And again, it's like, it's good. This is the problem. What do you do with a film that is good, but not really fun?
Put it above Jason Bourne.
No, yeah, no, no. I'm quite high on this list.
It's, when you say quite high, you mean like.
Like I'm it's definitely above like Ready Player One and Wonder Woman, like hands down, and the acting is also like fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's like everybody's knocking it out. I don't know.
From
what I understand, it's also like it's a bit of like a who's who of like Swedish actors, like the uncles and stuff. If you were into like Swedish cinema, would be like, oh, it's that guy and it's that guy and it's that guy. Like this was an ensemble cast like Succession.
Would you look at that? The Hunt for the Red October.
October. No one to blame for but that.
Nobody to blame but myself.
Yeah, I think this seems to be the right zone for it.
Clerks 3? Boy, we have that high. I like that it's above Star Wars Episode 7.
Well, that's the high.
That's
where it is. Like I said, can it get higher? No, I don't think it's getting higher than...
Sneakers, Thor. Those are all good movies.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
For a Quiet Place.
I think it might go above Thor. And again, like I said, it is absolutely capital F film.
Mm-hmm.
But I was shocked at how drawn in and compelled I was to just blast through it in the span of 4 days. Like when something is like that, like heavy and kind of like dry, but is still like draws you in and is compelling, and you're like, I want to watch it. Like Sarah was like, I'm a little disappointed that there isn't more. I could just watch this family drama forever because everybody's real good at it.
Did we actually put Morbius at number 35 above The Mummy?
What? Number 35 above
did
The
we?
Mummy?
It's, was that
it's
us? Did
one,
we?
It's above the 1999. No, that can't be right. Hang on.
That can't be right. It has to have been 135 or something.
Yeah, there's no way it was underneath Thor no Ragnarok. Way. That's nonsense.
It's
above
that
Into the
right
Spider-Verse.
Now.
Yeah, this is impossible. It's above Transformers the Movie, 1986. Scott would abide by that.
It's above Big Trouble in Little China.
Hold on. I'm literally going to fix it right now. I can't
shoot it. Shoot it straight down to 135 at least.
How? I don't know, Scott. I thought you were the only one who saw it. You want to just tell
Morbius
me?
The Living Vampire?
I guess
it's I can't be the only one who saw that.
I did not see it.
No, I wouldn't watch Morbius. Are you kidding me?
Okay, well, I'm locking in, whatamacallit. Fanny and Alexander, I believe, goes directly below Love and Thunder and above Edge of 17.
Yeah, John, forget 135. I think 235. That's a Jason Bourne, Batman the Killing Joke, Cats level.
Okay. Well,
that's wild to me.
It must have been a typo.
I'm looking it up to see if I have my...
Your notes. List of,
Morbius.
It's Morbius time!
Morbius was... Oh, no, you know what happened?
What's that?
The note was above The Mummy, but we were talking about the Tom Cruise Mummy, not the Brendan Fraser Mummy.
That's totally fair. The,
all right,
the 2017 Mummy is at 204.
Okay.
Yeah, I see it.
Oh, and directly under The Descendants. That totally makes sense, too.
All right, I was going fast, you know? I was moving fast.
Yeah, I was like...
All right.
We got to the root of the problem. Above The Mummy, here it goes. Pachoop!
All right, it's literally fixed.
April Fool's, right. There we go, we got it.
There we go.
We got you guys.
From May 2022, we planned it for April Fool's 2024. We were going to put Morbius as a top 50 movie on the list for 2 years. Gotcha.
Long form plotting.
Oh, man. Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, so back to Roadhouse. Roadhouse. Mm-hmm.
Roadhouse.
I've got this to say about Roadhouse before we even get started. very rarely have I seen an actor in a movie have such a good time at being in a movie as Conor McGregor.
I was going to say as Jake Gyllenhaal, honestly. Like,
I don't know, man. Conor McGregor looks like he's so thrilled to be in that movie.
He definitely is, but even just so have you heard seen the Jake Gyllenhaal interview about Roadhouse?
No.
So apparently he's friends with the director and they've always kind of wanted to work together and stuff, but the guy's like more of an action movie director. And he was like out to dinner or whatever, and he was like, someone was just sort of like, oh man, you should see there's like a Roadhouse reboot script like floating around. And Jake Gyllenhaal apparently was like, I'm going to stop you right there. That's the movie we're doing. That sounds like a terrible idea. It was like, let's do it. And I was like, that sets such a tone for the film of like, you're like, Jake Gyllenhaal is quite clearly slumming it in this film, but like loving every second of being this character of just like, I'm a former UFC guy. Like basically the bit is he's a former UFC guy who like killed a guy in a ring, but like after the bell was even like waved off, like he goes to a dark place, even when the ref tried to like pull him off. And like, anyway,
he throws four or five too many punches and the guy dies.
Yeah, exactly. So opening sequence kind of starts off and he like, he's in like a weird bare knuckle boxing fight. And as soon as he like takes his shirt off, the guy realizes it's him and is like, hell no. And he makes his money and he leaves.
Not just the guy.
Post Malone.
Post Malone is the reigning champion. Who's like, fuck this, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out of here. And then they're like, yeah, I just want to hire you as a bouncer for my Roadhouse bar down in Florida. And he's like, I'm not the guy. Reluctantly gets stabbed. Is the guy. And then he kind of, you know, has to save the bar while evil people try to take over the bar. That's the storyline. The end.
That's the movie.
Conor McGregor is in it. And clearly Conor McGregor, A, as Scott said, cannot contain his joy of being in a film because he has like a shit-eating grin on his face at all times, to the point where I'm sure that the director was just like, okay, that's part of your character now. You're just smiling all the time. Like to the point where like Sarah and I were joking about the, you know, the Adam Sandler like low budget Halloween costumes where he's like, I'm smiley guy. Look at me smiling all day long. Why is he smiling all the time? Now give me some candy. Like, and that is Conor McGregor's character. His accent fluctuates wildly, even though he's doing an Irish accent. It's like, because he's clearly trying to like tone it down, like it's less of a thick accent as his actual accent, but as a result it's just the shittiest, most inconsistent accent in the world. And every step he takes is the Conor strut too. He just walks strutting at all times.
Can't you see Conor McGregor being like, okay, so we filmed that scene a couple of times, what if I did it completely naked? And the director's just going, okay, sure.
And then he's smiling more. Oh man, it's so funny. The opening scene when he, well, not the opening scene, but the opening Roadhouse fight. He's like, oh man, I think you broke my arm. I definitely broke your arm, and you're gonna need medical attention. And he's like, the nearest hospital's about 25 minutes away, and they're like, we're bikers though. We all rode motorbikes. Like can't drive a motorbike with a broken arm. Next cut is like Jake Gyllenhaal and the goons he just beat up driving them to the hospital
in a minivan.
And he's like bump, and they're like, ah, like again, everybody is having fun in this movie, and
the villains ham it up. The 80s bad guy real estate developer wears an unbuttoned shirt and a white suit the whole time.
Demanding to be shaved on a boat and then getting mad at the guy who keeps nicking him. It's just like, let's shoot the stupidest 1980s bad guy scene.
Oh, yeah. Keith, Marissa and I watched the original Roadhouse a couple weeks ago to get ready for Roadhouse.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show.
The bad guy makes so much more sense in this new version.
Well, yeah, because you said that like in the original Roadhouse, they're just like, I hate Patrick Swayze.
Let's I run him. This town. I get a cut of everything in the business that runs in this town. okay, but like the bar is still paying you, and now they're successful. That you're getting more money. He's
you're
like,
making
fuck you,
more
Patrick
money.
Swayze. I'm gonna burn it down. But no, like they're making like money hand over fist now. You're getting 10% of everything. Just go stab them. I liked it better when this place was a shithole.
Yeah. Also, the Florida Roadhouse seems like the best bar. Like other than the fights, just a lot of good live music, like good vibe, good like right on the beach. I was like, that's a cool spot. Why is this place a shithole?
Polite biker, one of my favorite characters.
Oh, why did I blank on his name? The guy from Broad City.
Just sweet.
Yeah, just one of the guys who like towards the end, he's the one who's like, I think you broke my arm, and then he's like, I did break your arm. Like at one point, he's like, oh, cool, you murdered that guy. I'm just leaving. Listen, I'm not really in this gang. I just like to ride motorcycles, and it's kind of something you can't really do alone. And this was like the only group of guys that was doing it, but I see that I was wrong. I'm leaving. Just like
he drives away. Never seen him again. Don't see him again. He's gone. He drives out of the movie.
Exactly. Like as Jake Gyllenhaal is going on like his final murderous rampage against all the people that have like wronged him in the bar and his loved ones. This guy's just like goodbye. As he's like, oh, you murdered that guy, eh? Huh. I'll see you
later.
Don't
worry about it. I'm leaving.
It's good. It reminded me of the what do you call it? John Wick, the Kevin Nash. You want to take the night off? Yep. Just leaves. Just like never in the movie again. Just goodbye.
He gets to live.
100%. Yeah, he's like the only guy. He's probably one of the only people that John Wick talks to that gets to live. Did you see the weird three take punches of how they made the punches go?
No.
So it's apparently one like worked punch, like kind of like getting as close as you can. Mm-hmm. Another punch going actually as hard as you can into like a basically a boxing bag where the guy's head was, and then another worked punch on the follow through. So there's like framed exactly the same time. So like the special effects guys did like three punches, so there's a real impact, and they do this kind of this weird almost like 300 kind of like zoom and slow down, but you kind of get to see the like they can have shots of where you can clearly see that someone's impacting something. Mm-hmm. And it's not like CGified and like in terms of like their arm flexing or whatever else like that, but obviously the guy's and then like that split second then switches to the guy's reaction. There's a cool video on how they did it. It's like a low budget special effect to make like punches look cool, because like the punches look real cool.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Like, but however they were doing it was, you know,
it was such an 80s
old school special effects.
It was such an 80s movie, like from top to bottom. Like, bad guy had very simple motivations.
Mm-hmm. Reluctant good guy. You messed with the wrong guy.
The fucking white suits and boats and boat chase.
The only thing like
evil
is
alligator.
That it well no I think he's also hang on they kept saying crocodile, and I was like, I didn't look this up, but I'm like, they're in Florida, isn't
they're
that
Florida,
gator?
It's gators.
Yeah, but they say crocodile every time. They repeatedly say crocodile, and it was bugging me.
That has to be like, that has to be a joke in the script then. They're in Florida, like they're in the Florida Keys.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Oh man, speaking of so Greg on the Puck Soup Patreon, Greg Wyszynski was writing, Scott, you'll appreciate this, mm-hmm. was writing a review of like the new Netflix movie, like Players or whatever, because Greg was like, I'm always interested whenever like sports journalist enters like movie or TV show or whatever.
Right.
And this show, like the main character plays a sports journalist. That's not important. What is important is that there's a line of dialogue where someone's like, oh, blah, 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 blah. It's like how the great one has fallen. And she's like, oh, the thing that bothers me about that is that you're obviously assuming that the great one is Wayne Gretzky. The great one forever is and always will be Bobby Hull. And Wyszynski's like, what? You can't say that in 2024, even if that was your opinion, ever. You mean Bobby Orr, and the writers did not catch it.
Because one,
Hull's not in that conversation at all.
He's not in that conversation. has an established nickname, the Golden Jet,
mm-hmm.
Beat his children and said Nazis had some good ideas. Like, just all of those Ooh. Things you can't.
Yeah, exactly. He was like, he's like, nobody fact checked that line of dialogue. And they were like, yeah, the famous Bobby hockey player. Someone's like, Bobby Hull? They're like, sounds right. And he's like, and that's what goes into the movie. And he's like, incorrect. And by virtue of that, you've made the main character now a piece of shit because she's a big fan of Bobby Hull.
Yeah.
I was like, that's terrible. That is terrible that somehow that went through, like, test screenings, and no one was like, don't you mean Bobby Orr? Like, if you're gonna have, like...
Who was the hockey consultant on that movie?
Yeah, exactly. He was like, I was not expecting any lines of dialogue to reflect on hockey of anything, and when they did go there, they just made the wildest, the shittiest line of dialogue they possibly could. Anyway, we should rank Roadhouse, I feel. Yes.
I mean, yeah, no, it was fun. I had a good time watching it. Again, Conor McGregor was like, I'm in a movie. I'm in a movie.
And it's also great because they get to do in the credits, they get to do the, and introducing Conor McGregor. Because it's his first film. Mm-hmm. What was the, I'm looking for, where's that Vin Diesel movie?
Triple X.
Yeah.
Pretty oddly comparable. Actually.
But yeah, but I'm just saying.
It's 113.
Well, no, Triple X Return of Xander Cage is 114?
Yeah. Yep. 113. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My list hasn't... I haven't refreshed my list yet. Morbius is still at 35, so it's 114 on my list. Yeah, I think I would put it above even F9. That might be where it starts to.
The Descent?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't see it necessarily getting past The Descent or Sleepaway Camp or Child's Play. I don't know how you feel, Scott.
I mean, I feel like that's high for Roadhouse.
But Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage, I feel it's better than that.
That's true. Some of the stuff below it is not great. Like Solo and Venom and Sonic and Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
I kind of feel like it goes above The Bad Batch and below The Disaster Artist.
Sure. I can kind of, I have no strong feelings about F9.
Bliss could go lower, too. Man, we need to actually get it.
We keep talking about it. It's been like
we need to do that thing that we said that we should do. We even got some feedback on it.
Did we get a lot?
We'd have to do like an in-house face-to-face pen and paper.
I'm all right with that.
Yeah.
Get together.
Listen, it's not going to be a podcast. It's going to be a 24-hour live stream of us just watching many of these films. And figuring them out. We're like, I don't know about this one. Let's watch it.
John, just look at the list right now. You want to scroll up all the way to the top?
Hold on. What did we say? We said below Disaster Artist, above Bad Batch?
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah, what? Yeah.
Just what's number two?
Good question. I'm pretty sure it's Mad Max, but...
It's definitely... Fury Road is not there, then it's Fury Road. I can tell you that.
It does look to me like there is no number two.
God damn it, John.
This thing is so fucking buggy, man.
No, three. Yeah, exactly. There is no number two. So somehow the numbers didn't all update.
Yeah.
Moving Morbius...
All right. Moving Morbius screwed everything up. I'm not... I'll play with it.
Oh, The Matrix is in that top 10, and it just turned 25 this week.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Freaking,
Sarah put on Aladdin over the weekend. That's just some background, like the original animated Aladdin.
I love that movie.
1992. Mm-hmm. Wow. I was like, oh yeah, I guess that makes sense. I was 9, whatever it was. I'm like, ugh.
I'm sure I've said this before, but like, Robin Williams in the special features was like, my favorite thing about Aladdin was they let me do a Warner Brothers movie at Disney. And I'm like, that's That's it exactly. He's
100%. I mean,
he's a Bugs Bunny character. He's a Looney Tunes character in that movie.
For sure. And there are a number of, I guess, like, he also plays like Ahmed or whatever at the beginning. And I was like, oh no, Robin Williams doing brown face voice. It was a different time.
Yeah.
I guess Disney credit is it is unedited on Disney Plus, but there is a disclaimer saying that like some of the stereotypes and whatever else like that are like not okay. They were never okay, but like this film is being like presented in its original form or whatever. And I was like, I guess I think that is the correct way to go about it, to be like, we do have a white comedian doing like stereotypical like Islamic accent right out the gate on this feature. Throw a disclaimer up there, kids. That's a good one. But yeah, like you said, definitely a different one. 30 something years ago.
Hi, thanks for sticking around to the very end of this show. That means you're our number one fan. As our number one fan, maybe you're wondering a way that you can show your support for this. We've set up a few ways, and the boys are going to tell you about it now.
If you like this show, you might know other people that like the show, or maybe they'll like some of the other stuff that we're doing on the website. If that's the case, you can tell them all about it using all of the social networks like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're on all of those, or you could just, you know, send people links directly to the website. Or if you live in a world without the internet and you only listen to podcasts, you can tell people about it with your human mouth. There's other ways we could support us, John.
If your interest in supporting us extends to the financial section, you might consider patreon.com/9to5cc. If you go there, you can get perks like early content, you can get your questions answered on the air, and you could get extra art.
We've been doing this show for a long time, so we kind of know what we're doing. Not really.
9to5.cc, podcasts, blogs, and comics, made in Montreal since 2011.